time of his martyrdom. Yes, you are going ahead of me in paradise.
As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah wa ala al-arwah allati halat bi fina'i alayka.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara An-Nahiya Al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. As-salamu ala al-Husayn alladhi samihat nafsuhu bimuhjatih.
Peace be upon Al-Husayn, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
As-salamu ala man ata'a Allah fi sirrihi wa alaniyatihi.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
As-salamu ala man ja'ala Allah shifa'a fi turbatihi.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
As-salamu ala man al-ijabatu tahta qubbatihi.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
As-salamu ala man al-a'immatu min dhurriyatihi.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the imams after him.
As-salamu ala ibn khatim al-anbiya. As-salamu ala ibn sayyid al-aghsiyaya.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
As-salamu ala ibn Fatimah al-Zahra. As-salamu ala ibn Khadijah al-Kubra.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadija, the great.
As-salamu ala ibn Sidrat al-Muntaha. As-salamu ala ibn Jannat al-Ma'wa. As-salamu ala ibn Zamzam wa Safa.
Peace be upon the son of the lotus tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
As-salamu ala al-murammal bid-dima. As-salamu ala al-mahduk al-khiba. As-salamu ala khamis ashab ahli al-kasaya.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
The moon of Muharram, times of sadness have come. The crescent has now arrived, casting gloom on Karbala, casting gloom on Karbala.
The moon of Muharram, times of sadness have come. The crescent has now arrived, casting gloom on Karbala, casting gloom on Karbala.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the Master of Martyrs, Imam al-Husayn, alayhi salam. This beautiful dialogue where Imam al-Husayn, alayhi salam, addressed Sa'id bin Abdullah al-Hanafi. We find that this conversation had occurred while Sa'id bin Abdullah al-Hanafi was breathing his last, as he was attaining the glorious state of martyrdom in the arms of Imam al-Husayn, alayhi salam. It was the time for noon prayers, and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was praying the salah. While Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was praying the salah, he was remembering the Almighty Allah. Some of the companions prayed behind Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, but a few of the companions stood to protect those people that were praying. Sa'id bin Abdullah al-Hanafi was one of those who stood to protect Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam from the arrows which were coming down upon this group of people praying the salah. These arrows had hit Sa'id bin Abdullah al-Hanafi, and at the end, it is Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam who gave Sa'id the good news and the glad tidings of paradise. Dear friends, if the one who is protecting others from praying the salah can have such a great position and status where during this life an immaculate and infallible Imam promises them paradise, what of those people who themselves conduct the salah? The importance of the daily prayers and the importance of protecting the daily prayers can be understood from this. And what is one of the ways in which one can protect these daily prayers? Well, that, dear friends, is to conduct those daily prayers and to do those daily prayers on time, to do those daily prayers with focus and attention and sincerity, presence of mind and presence of soul. This is what Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam teaches us. The pillar of religion is the salah. And if it is accepted, then all other deeds are accepted. But if, God forbid, it is not accepted, then none of the other deeds will be accepted. This is Dialogue Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always. عليك مني
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Radio. Around the World with Reporters.
Representatives of religious minorities have met in the Iranian capital Tehran to condemn the desecration of Muslims' holy book Quran, saying that such a sacrilegious act is aimed at creating discord and division among followers of different religious beliefs. They condemned repeated desecrations of the Holy Quran and Islamic sanctities in Sweden, noting that the Swedish government is fully responsible for the consequences of provoking the sentiments of the Muslim world.
Such insults to Islamic sanctities are a perfect example of organized violence in a hostile move against 2 billion Muslims across the world, God-believing people and followers of divine religions. Desecration of religious sanctities is rejected in all faiths. The recent desecrations in Sweden is considered a heinous crime and is unacceptable.
The recurring incidents of the desecration of Islamic sanctities in Europe, particularly in Sweden and Denmark, have drawn outrage across the Muslim world in recent weeks, especially here in Iran. In the Iranian capital Tehran, demonstrators gathered in front of the Swedish embassy to protest against the sacrilegious move. Moreover, millions of people took to the streets in Tehran and other major cities after Friday prayers this week to voice their anger over the incidents in Sweden and Denmark.
The sinister plot hatched by the enemies of Islam is not limited only to this period of time. The enemies of divine religions have always tried to sow the seeds of discord among their followers. But they should know that followers of Islam and other divine religions are vigilant and will not allow such insulting acts to create division and discord among them, and they get even more united in the face of the enemies.
Any insult to religious sanctities and divine books anywhere by anyone is deplorable. Any freedom of speech which is meant to violate the dignity, values, and religious sanctities of good and God-loving people is not freedom of speech and has no value and is strongly condemned.
Muslim protesters have demanded punishment for the perpetrators, calling for the boycott of Swedish and Danish products.
Representatives of divine religions here believe that branding such moves as acts of democracy and freedom will only further fuel terrorism and extremism across the world, the consequences of which will boomerang on the West before any other side. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Handcuffed and humiliated before her child for the offense she didn't commit. A black woman arrested for what the Metropolitan Police in London suspected was a bus fare evasion. They were wrong. She was released. What ensued? Widespread outrage from the public and politicians. Claudia Webb, MP, said the Met Police is the boot of the state. They do not care about black people and black women in particular. The incident has reignited national conversations about institutional racism and misogyny within the British police force, a force grappling with a crisis of confidence. Revelations of criminals within its ranks, including Wayne Cousins, who abducted, raped, and murdered Sarah Everard as she was walking home nearly 2 years ago, and David Carrick, who admitted to dozens of sexual offenses against 12 women, have shaken faith in the force.
Policing in the UK relies on public consent and trust, but confidence in the police has been in decline in the past few years, especially when it comes to racism against minorities and violence against women and girls. And with the continuing disclosures of members of the police found guilty in those crimes, it's only exposing how deep the problems run.
Of all minority communities, black Britons say they feel the least safe at the hands of British police. The strip search of Child Q, a black 15-year-old girl suspected of having marijuana at a London school in 2020 by two female officers without another adult present, and the police killing of Chris Baba last September, a 24-year-old father and aspiring rapper, are two recent examples.
This case of this young mother with a child is actually symptomatic of the degree of systemic and culturally ingrained racism within the Metropolitan Police Service. And it's a tale that I hear from black mothers all over the city consistently about their unprofessional, violent, and sometimes racist treatment at the hands of them and their children at the hands of the Metropolitan Police Service.
Black children are 11 times more likely to be strip searched in England and Wales than their white peers. And more than half stopped and searched by the police say they were left with feelings of humiliation or embarrassment.
trauma is a real lived and everyday experience for Black people in terms of their relationship with policing, whether it's stop and search, whether it's violent arrest. Again, by the Met's own standards, the Home Office's own figures, you're more likely to be stop and search, you're more likely to be violent arrested. And what we find is the trauma that's inflicted on the individuals in communities is completely unrecognized and ignored.
Restoring trust would be a massive undertaking. Some are calling for the force to be disbanded in the wake of the recent scandals. Others say the promised overhaul of the UK's entire police culture may be just one step to restore some measure of faith in the force. Saeed Poreza, London.
Votes in the House of Lords, the migration bill is set to become law in the United Kingdom, enabling the Home Office to detain and remove anyone entering the country to seek asylum. They could also be transported to Rwanda or a third country under the plan. The UK struck an initial £140 million agreement with the East African country this year, but the plan has been stuck in the courts. Former British Prime Minister Theresa May has slammed what critics call the Illegal Migration Bill, or IMB, saying it will consign more people to slavery.
It will enable more slave drivers to operate and make money out of human misery. It will consign more people to slavery.
The United Nations has also lambasted the new legislation and warned that it's against international law.
The bill is at variance with the country's obligations under international human rights and refugee law and will have profound consequences for people in need of international protection.
The UN also raised concerns about other countries following suit. UN refugee and human rights experts believe the IMB will exacerbate the already vulnerable situation of refugees across the UK. The No Accommodation Network, which represents a network of over 140 organisations and charities across the UK, called the passing of the bill shameful.
Whilst not unexpected, the passing of the Illegal Migration Bill marks a profoundly shameful and damaging moment for refugee protection and human rights in the UK.
Just hours after the UK passed the controversial bill, a so-called accommodation barge arrived in Portland Port, Dorset. It's due to house 500 asylum seekers, twice the number of people that it was designed for, raising doubts about its safety. It has drawn strong condemnation from different groups and organisations worldwide, with many describing it as a floating prison. Delivering a speech in Westminster, Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper called the new IMB law a con and the use of barges as a sign of the Conservatives' total failure to clear the asylum backlog. A recent poll by YouGov reveals Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's rapidly falling favourability rating, which has sunk to its lowest level to date. In spite of protests and concerns over the anti-refugee plan, the government is adamant that it's the right move. According to official figures, more than 45,000 people were detected arriving by small boats in 2022, 60% higher than in 2021. Now, with the new bill, British authorities have the green light to indiscriminately remove asylum seekers, regardless of whether they are at a risk of persecution, have suffered human rights violations, or are survivors of human trafficking.
The people of Pakistan have held countrywide protests to voice their anger at the recent act of desecration of the Quran in Sweden. In less than a month, an Iraqi refugee in Stockholm committed the sacrilegious act twice while protected by Swedish police. The protesters called on the Islamic world to cut ties with Sweden and to expel its ambassadors from their respective countries.
Muslim nations should check out a comprehensive line of action to end such sacrilegious acts. We'll continue our fight for the sanctity of our holy book.
In Europe, where you cannot talk about the Holocaust, burning the Quran is freedom of expression. This is the double standard of Europe. Such hate acts should be stopped.
Meanwhile, religio-political groups in Pakistan also demanded cutting off all diplomatic relations with Sweden, while urging the United Nations to legislate against the desecration of holy books, including the Quran.
Quran was desecrated from the second time in Sweden with the permission of the government. What freedom of expression is this? Global colonialist forces are behind this conspiracy, and the anti-Islam actors of Europe are involved in this insult.
While denouncing the incident, Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif pledged to launch a campaign to end the blasphemy of holy books in the Nordic state. He said that his government would help create a common strategy to eliminate Islamophobia with the help of Organization of Islamic Cooperation.
Muslims around the world have been outraged by the repeated desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden in recent months. They are all in unison that these incidents are blatant provocation, attempting to inflame sentiments and undermine Islam as a religion. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thousands of people marched and rallied in Seoul Saturday to mark the 70th anniversary of the signing of the Korean War Armistice. They demand a peace treaty with North Korea and view critically the strong ties with the U.S. developing under South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol.
The United States is intervening in our political, diplomatic, military, and economy to maintain and strengthen its hegemony. As a result, the sovereignty of South Korea is being trampled and the national interest is being abandoned.
Previous South Korean President Moon Jae-in had engaged with North Korea and sought to replace the armistice with a peace treaty, but that failed to materialize with the U.S. refusal to respond to Pyongyang's freezing of its nuclear and missile testing.
Relations between North Korea and South Korea in the international community have deteriorated under President Yoon, who's initiated large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises. The U.S. has also deployed so-called strategic assets to South Korea, weapons capable of delivering a nuclear strike against North Korea, further raising tensions here.
South Koreans here have also been sensitive about the developing trilateral alliance with the U.S. and Japan.
Alliances involve solidarity and equal relationships, not subordination. President Yoon's administration has been increasingly influenced by Japan as well as the United States. The strengthening of the military alliance is very dangerous.
The official armistice anniversary is July 27th. Through this week, various events, including in Washington, D.C., will address replacing the armistice with a peace treaty and seeking better ties with Pyongyang. Frank Smith, Seoul.
After a call by Hezbollah chief Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, Lebanese worshippers took to the streets after noon prayers on Friday to protest the desecration of the Holy Quran.
I demand for the government of the Lebanon to expel the embassy of Sweden embassy for our dignity and prosperity.
Our protest is to defend and secure our Holy Quran and all the holies, starting from hijab, prayers and adhan, and all the holy sites, including the cause and the only cause of all Arab and Muslims, which are the Quds, etc., and the Quran.
We want to defend our Quran, and we don't want anyone to violate our holy book.
In a speech on Thursday, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, denounced the Swedish government for allowing such sacrilegious acts to take place on its territory and stressed that all Arab and Muslim states need to follow in the footsteps of Iraq and expel the Swedish ambassadors.
If all the Arab and Muslim countries withdrew their ambassadors from Sweden and asked the Swedish ambassadors in our countries to leave, then what would happen to Sweden and its government and its interests? Boycotting products is a good step, but it's not enough to teach them a lesson. When they see that their interests are at stake, and the Arab and Muslim countries are not too weak to take this step, then they would be forced to resolve this issue.
Nasrallah also called on the Lebanese government to adopt a firm stance against Sweden and asked the worshippers and mourners attending Muharram processions to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein to always carry a copy of the Quran to show the world that they are ready to sacrifice their lives for the sake of protecting the holy book.
Today we have gathered to fulfill the call by His Eminence, the Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah, who is the great-grandson of Prophet Muhammad, to whom God sent the Qur'an. We tell Sweden and the entire world that our Qur'an is Al-Quds. It is our dignity, and we will defend the Qur'an with all our power until they learn to respect it.
It is our duty to preserve God's religion and the messages He has sent us. To denounce the violation of the Qur'an, we came here today to say that this is our constitution. And we call on everyone, be they Christian, Druze, Sunni, Shiite, no matter what their sect or their Arab or Muslim nationality, to stand with us.
Several Muslim countries have already summoned Sweden's ambassadors or its charge d'affaires to protest the second incident of state-authorized desecration of the Holy Quran in the Swedish capital.
Lebanese protesters have stressed that the Holy Quran is not only a divine book which introduces Islamic teachings, it is also a book which represents humane values for all mankind. People here today say they are steadfast in defending the Holy Quran against any sacrilegious act. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Afghan female school graduates are shedding tears of dismay after their exclusion by the Taliban rulers from the university entrance exam, also known as Concur. They have been studying hard for the national test in order to pursue higher education. But all that has been in vain, as the Taliban have announced that only male students can sit for the exam this year.
I wanted to pursue my higher education and become a leader and serve my people. But now they say that girls cannot take the university entrance exam. This is unfair and unjust. I am so sad and feel like my life is over.
I wanted to enroll in medical university and become a professional doctor and help my country prosper. But unfortunately, the Taliban shut the doors on our dreams and future and denied us our rights.
In a new report, UN human rights experts say the Taliban authorities have increased restrictions on women and girls in Afghanistan in recent months. The UN has urged the Taliban to respect and protect the rights of all Afghans, especially women and girls, and to ensure their access to education, healthcare, and other essential services.
With all these restrictions on women in place, Afghanistan's future is looking increasingly bleak. Girls and women are losing hope as they are being excluded from all political, social, and educational spheres.
The Taliban have not given any clear indication of when or if girls will be able to resume their studies at high schools or universities. They say they are upholding women's rights in accordance with their interpretation of Sharia law and Afghan culture. No other Muslim country in the world imposes such restrictions on women's education. The fate of Afghan girls remains uncertain as they are being barred from most educational settings. For many of them, education not only is a source of knowledge, but also a source of hope and empowerment. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thank you.
Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remember the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears."
In the limelight.
The U.S. bases abroad are not just a pain for local residents, but also a political problem for the host countries. What comes with the U.S. military bases is not peace and security, but clouds of war and endless fear. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Daily wrote, "We were forced to fight for a long time, hoping that people would understand our situation. Under the hot sun, dozens of residents on the Japanese island of Okinawa held signs expressing their anger at the United States military base there. Every day, there is a large number of military aircraft training at the U.S. military base in Okinawa. To the local people, the loud noise generated by various military equipment is not only unbearable, but also causing health problems such as sleep disorder. However, the U.S. authorities do not seem to care about what local people think. Actually, they don't need to, since the U.S. forces in Japan are not subject to Japanese jurisdiction. Local people's concerns are all in vain." Protests by local Japanese have been going on for more than a decade. Over the years, American troops based on this island have committed countless crimes. According to the statistics of the Okinawa Police, from 1972 to 2020, U.S. troops committed 6,000 crimes in the local area, and 1 in 10 was serious. A series of sexual assaults by U.S. troops in Japan in 2016 sparked widespread outrage among local people. But the journey to upholding justice and punishing the criminals is too long to embark on. The complex litigation process often makes victimized local women swallow their pride. According to survey results, the prosecution rate of crimes committed by U.S. troops in Japan is less than 20%. Even if the victims won the case, the compensation will be mostly borne by the Japanese government, and the U.S. authorities will do little. According to statistics by the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, a U.S.-based think tank, the U.S. has 750 overseas military bases in 80 countries, which host a large number of U.S. troops all year around, costing more than $55 billion a year. Not long ago, the New York Times published an article titled "A Brutal Sex Trade for American Soldiers" that exposed the suffering of Korean women at U.S. military bases in Korea in 1980s with the connivance and even assistance of the South Korean government. About 19,000 South Korean women were sexually exploited by the U.S. troops in its host country, and many of the victims still live with memories of fear and humiliation. The U.S. bases abroad are not just a pain for local residents, but also a political problem for the host countries. What comes with the U.S. military bases is not peace and security, but clouds of war and endless fear. Over the decades, the U.S. has continued to wage military strikes and even wars of aggression from its overseas military bases against other sovereign countries with different political views. From Latin America to the West Asia region, from East Asia to Eastern Europe, with the help of its global military bases, the United States was behind almost every major military conflict since the Second World War. Earlier this year, the Pentagon announced a deal with the Philippines that it will add four more military bases in this country. Some worried that this marks a return to 1980s, when the Philippines was home to 15,000 U.S. troops and two of the largest American military bases in Asia. Renato Reyes, Secretary General of New Patriotic Alliance, said, "We have a long history of inequality in our relationship. The Philippines has been forced to shoulder the social cost. There is a history of rape, child abuse, and of toxic waste." The U.S. action was also criticized for escalating regional tension and undermining regional peace and stability in the Asia-Pacific. The worldwide military bases of the United States have not made the world or even the U.S. any safer. The U.S. needs to stop finding excuses to further expand its military hegemony and drag the world into more conflicts. The biggest threat to world peace and stability is none other than the United States itself. Also, the website of Axios reported, on May 14, 2023, thousands of protesters gathered near Kadena Air Base in Okinawa to call for the closure of U.S. military bases on the Japanese island. The annual protests come as Okinawa is increasingly at the center of a possible superpower showdown in the Pacific. The island's location, just a one-hour flight east of Taiwan, makes it key to any U.S. military response if China were to attack Taiwan. Protesters chanted, "Give us back our peaceful life," and "Osprey, get out," a reference to the military helicopters often seen in the skies over the island. A U.S. Marines spokesperson on the island did not respond to a request for comment. The United States military has had an extensive presence on the island since 1945 and occupied it until 1972, when it was returned to Japanese sovereignty. Chemical contamination in areas close to the bases, noise pollution, and crimes committed by U.S. servicemen, including rape, have in the past enraged the population and sparked massive protests. Protesters told Axios that they feel they have long been forced to bear a disproportionate burden of U.S.-Japan military alliance. Okinawa makes up less than 1% of Japan's total land area, but hosts more than 70% of all U.S. military facilities in Japan. Ooh.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late... Rawzati.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the thoughts and works of the most prominent Sahabi or the companions of Prophet Muhammad and the Shiite infallible Imams. I am Ata, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai are two guest speakers for today's discussion. Sheikh Fadai, salamu alaikum.
Salamu alaikum.
And Sheikh Rouhani, salamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Today we want to talk about one of the faithful companions and Sahabi of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, Habib ibn Muzahir Asadi. He was from the Bani Asad tribe, and he is among the Shuhada and the martyrs of Karbala event on the day of Ashura. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of Habib ibn Muzahir Asadi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Habib ibn Muzahir Asadi was one of the great companions of the Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, as well as Imam Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam, and Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhim alafu al-tahiyyati wasalam. So... About his life, we should say that, of course, his full name is Habib. He belonged to the tribe of Asad or Asadi, and he was born, he was living in Medina and Kufa.
Yes.
Of course, he was martyred on the day of Ashura, along with the companions of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and also was buried in the haram of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. And, of course, Habib ibn Muzahir, about his virtues, we can mention a lot of things. One of them is that he was a very pious kind of person, a real worshipper of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and also one of the very, let's say, devoted companions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam.
Yes.
He narrated also lots of ahadith narrations from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam, but... his life at the time of the Amir al-Mu'minin is very brilliant, also particularly at the time of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. His devotion to Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam is also very much, we say, golden and brilliant part of his life that should be mentioned about him. And of course, at the time of Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam, he was one of the members of Shurtatul Khamis, which was like a special guard or a special force who protecting Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam against the enemies. They were, we can say, the most devoted people to Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam. That's why they were called Shurtatul Khamis.
Yes.
Yes. And later, of course, at the time of other A'imma alayhi salatu wasalam, particularly at the time of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, again, his role is very much significant, very much important. It shows that how much did he love Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, that even when he was an old man, he participated in the Battle of Karbala.
Yes.
And he fought against the Yazidis, and he was martyred on the day of Ashura along with the Ahlul Bayt, the companions of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam.
Okay, as you said, during the imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam, he was among the first people who did bayah with Imam Ali alayhi salam, the ardent followers and the companions of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But mostly, Habib's life is linked to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So, was Habib from the beginning accompanying Imam al-Hussein? Or no, he was in Kufa and he was among the inviters of Imam al-Hussein to Kufa, Sheikh.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As my brother mentioned, Habib was one of the members of Shurtatul Khamis. They were a special force
who guarded Imam Ali alayhi salam. And in the time that Imam Ali migrated to Kufa, he migrated from Medina to Kufa, he accompanied Imam. So after that time, he lived in Kufa. So when Imam Hussein was in Medina, he was not in Medina. So he was in Kufa, and he was one of the people who invited Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But at the time that most of people broke their bay'ah and allegiance with Imam Hussein, he didn't do the same. He was on his bay'ah, didn't break that. And when he saw that the situation is dangerous in Kufa, in order to defend Imam, he exited Kufa at night in a way that the guards of Yazid don't know about that. He exited the city of Kufa and joined the army of Imam. So with Imam, he entered the city of Karbala. So he was in Kufa, exited Kufa and joined the army of Imam and entered Karbala. He was with Imam up to the time of his martyrdom. And it is good to know that Habib was an old man. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was not expected from Habib to participate in the battlefield, and a battle which is not a usual one. As you know, the number of people in the army of Imam was not like the number that we have in the other side. The other side, they were hundreds of thousands. But yes, in the side of Imam, there was just 72 people, of course, beside the Ahlul Bayt and their family. So they were just a few people guarding Imam, and he could say with himself that it is not my duty. I did bay'ah, and now it is not my duty to participate in this battlefield. But because of his real life, he participated in the war, and it was not one of the usual fighters. He was one of the commanders of fight at the day of Ashura. Imam Hussein appointed him as the commander of the left wing, left side of the army. So he was a commander at that age. And it is mentioned that on the night of Ashura, before Ashura, the night before that day, he heard that Lady Zainab is so worried about the day of Ashura, and she's worried that Imam Hussein is alone. When he heard that, Habib gathered all the companions and they went to Lady Zainab, and they guaranteed that they defend Imam Hussein up to their death. They don't allow Imam to be alone. So this is the real position of Habib, a warrior, a brave one, and of course he was one of the scholars of our Shiite belief.
That's right. When the people pay visit to the holy shrine of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala, they also pay visit to Habib ibn Muzahir's shrine, which is maybe not far away from that, okay? A little bit chamber, just in vicinity of the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, you give us some details and about the picture of Habib ibn Muzahir. Along with Muslim al-Saja, he was among the people who left Kufa in a secretive way to join Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his army on the day of Ashura, and finally they were both martyred.
About Habib ibn Muzahir, there are lots of nice points and interesting points that could be mentioned. One of them is that Habib ibn Muzahir knew something secret. He had علم المنايا, which is said that he knew something unseen, like secrets.
Yes.
He learned them from Ahl al-Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam. One of them is that is mentioned in the history, is a dialogue, a conversation between Habib ibn Muzahir and Maytham Tammar.
Okay.
Which is very interesting.
Very good. What is the story?
Yeah, the story is this, that in this conversation, they talk about the way that they will die. They knew, both of them knew, how will they die or how will they be martyred. Later, what happened to Habib ibn Muzahir and as well as Maysam ibn Tammar was exactly the things that were mentioned in their conversation years before the event of Ashura.
Oh.
So it was the thing that they knew about themselves. They
so maybe they were given this news by the Imam.
By the Ahl
al-Bayt,
of course, by Amir al-Mu'minin, Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. Yes, and also when it comes to the event of Ashura, there are very nice scenes or let's say points that should be mentioned here. One of them is that Habib ibn Muzahir once convinced the enemies of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wasalam on the evening of the day of Tasu'a, because on the day of Tasu'a they decided to attack the tents of Ahl al-Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. It was Habib ibn Muzahir who talked to them and convinced them not to attack on the day of Tasu'a. During the night of Ashura, again, one of the very, very important thing that was done by Habib ibn Muzahir was this, that some of the companions of Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam told Habib ibn Muzahir that Lady Zainab salamullahi alayha is very much worried about Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam, about the day of Ashura, which would be the next day. And then Habib ibn Muzahir gathered the companions of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wasalam, yes, and told them that okay, we should talk to Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wasalam, because Lady Zainab salamullah alayha is very much worried about the day of Ashura. And it is one of the very golden event of Ashura, which happened at the night of Ashura by Habib ibn Muzahir. And he gathered the companions of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wasalam to tell Zainab that we are with Abu Abdullah, and you shouldn't be worried about the day of Ashura.
That's right.
These are the things that are mentioned in the history,
okay,
which shows the great role of Habib.
That's right.
On the event of Ashura.
That's sorry. Right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani. Even the name of Habib ibn Muzahir is mentioned in the Ziyarah text of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, which is read out on Sha'ban 15th. This shows the great significance. And Sheikh Fadai, he is buried just not very much close to the other shuhada of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Do you know the reason?
Yes, you know, Habib was from a tribe called Bani Asad, as it was mentioned. And in the time that Imam Husayn reached Karbala, Habib asked Imam that I can call some people in order to help you, because Bani Asad live near to Karbala.
Yes.
By the permission of Imam Hussein, he went to his tribe. He was one of the great people of Bani Asad, Muslim ibn Usajj and Habib ibn Muzahir. Yes. Both of them were some of the great people of Bani Asad. He went to his tribe and asked them to help Imam Hussein, and all the tribe accepted that, and they started to go to the battlefield. But this news reached to the army of Yazid, and they made an obstacle. They didn't allow. You know, they sent an army to the Bani Asad, and they didn't allow that tribe to reach Imam Hussein. They couldn't go to a battlefield of Ashura.
Yes.
But when they heard Bani Asad, when they heard the news of martyrdom of Imam Hussein, they started to, they reached to the city of Karbala. They went there. So the burial ceremony of Imam Hussein and other martyrs of Karbala was done by this tribe. Imam Sajjad came to Karbala, of course, by a miracle.
Yes.
Because it was not normal journey.
Yes, yes.
Imam Sajjad came to Karbala by miracle, yes, and helped Bani Asad. Why? Because Bani Asad didn't know who are these bodies. The, yes, bodies didn't have any, yeah, head.
That's right.
So Imam Sajjad knew all of the bodies.
Yes.
He helped them to bury the corpse of the Ashura martyrs.
Yes.
So there was a grave for Imam Hussein and Ali Akbar and Ali Asghar, and other one for all of the martyrs of Karbala. But because Habib ibn Mazahir was one of their head, the head of their tribe.
The tribes, that's right.
Because of his position, Bani Asad decided to bury him in a different place.
Different place,
you know,
right,
in order to know the place of their head. So because of that,
yes,
he has, mm-hmm, a different tomb, and people go to his ziyarah,
that's right,
and he is beloved by all Shia.
That's right. Although he was old, he struggled hard on the day of Ashura. 62, they say, persons out of the enemy army of the enemy were killed by this man. Finally, so many people surrounded him, you know, that's right, with the swords, you know, they attacked him, they killed him, they beheaded him. When Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam reached the body of Habib ibn Muzahir, he said that, "I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for a great reward for you and your supporters." Also, it is mentioned that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has said that Habib was a virtuous man who could recite the whole Quran during the night. And as we said, the name of Habib ibn Muzahir is named the Ziyarat text of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. The famous conversation between Habib ibn Muzahir and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam about the creation of human beings before Adam, you know, and the questions that he asked from Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam referring to the Khilgat al-Nuri, or the light for creation of the Imams, is really outstanding. I invite our dear listeners to refer to this conversation, which refers to the, we can say, lightful creation of the holy Imams and Prophet Muhammad. Thank you very much, Sheikh Badai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life account of Habib ibn Muzahir. We again express our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his faithful companions on the day of Ashura 61 AH to our dear Muslims all around the world. For more information and for listening to our special programs in the month of Muharram, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.